So welcome back to episode 4 of the Run It Three Ways podcast. Today we've got some great listeners' questions to dive into, the latest running news and the usual training diaries. Now this week we've got to start with our very own GB and now England international athlete, Callum Elson, who is out in Spain racing no other than Olympic 10,000 meter gold medalist Borrega. But first of all, guys, how are we doing this week?
All good, thank you, Ben. What an intro that was. You got a big
thank you very much.
You've got a future in like hosting game shows and stuff with an introduction like that. Yeah. It sort of kept rising to that crescendo at the end.
Well, you've got to start the episode off with a little bit of quality, haven't we, really, before we start rambling on.
Tom, you discuss how you are and I'll be back in a brief second.
Oh, Callum's just unloading his shopping. He was fuming at the Tesco man before we started recording.
He certainly was. Between 7 and 8 and he's only just turning up now.
Yeah, I feel a bit smug because he was saying he was starving and I've just had a lovely bowl of ravioli.
Ooh, nice.
Little glass of kombucha as well. So I'm, raring to go. How are you, Ben?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks, mate. How's training been this week?
It's been a good one, actually. Yeah, at the moment, obviously coming back, still building back quite slowly and conservatively, every week should really be the best week of training. Every week should be better than the last anyway. And this one definitely topped last week. So
that's good. Yeah, I was having a look on your Strava and I always look at the little bar graph and it's trending in the right direction again, a little bit more than last week.
Yeah, the most depressing part is it does, I think it's 12 weeks that it does on Strava, isn't it, with the bars?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, I hadn't been running well for so long that my bars reset. So now like 60K a week looks like a massive week.
That's not a bad place to be.
No, yeah, but it's a world away from where it was. So
at least it doesn't look like you've done some great training and then you just tailed off for 5-6 weeks like mine does, and desperately trying to claw it back.
Yeah, well, you've got a stir fry in your belly, haven't you?
I have indeed. Right? Yeah. Well, I had to delay the podcast a little bit because I had to get my stir fry in before.
I'm back, chaps.
No worries. Shopping put away, all right.
Shopping's in the cupboards. Well, near enough.
Yeah. It's pretty quick. That was only 2.5 minutes.
I don't get a big shop.
Don't mess about.
Before we jump into the running stuff, what's some key items on Callum Elson's weekly shop? What can't you live without?
Well, I tell you what, instead of what I can't live without, I'll tell you some things that we've recently got that are a bit different to usual. So we've upgraded that oat milk recently. That's been a big middle class jump for us from this really funky one. Now it's got like a flamingo or something on the front, but it's like a barista oat version, so it goes pretty well in the old coffee machine. That's my girlfriend. I don't actually drink oat milk. I think it makes your coffee taste like porridge, but anyway. And another thing that we're actually having are meat-free meatballs. That's what we're trying this week. That's going to be a new one on the menu.
Oh, interesting.
Oh, my man.
So we'll see how they go. Yeah, I don't actually mind the alternative meats, but meat-free meatballs, yeah, I'll update you next episode.
Perfect. I like that. I like that very much.
Sounds delicious. Right, who wants to kick us off with the running weeks this week? Callum, do you fancy it?
Yeah, I reckon so.
I don't mind starting at all.
Talk us through your incredible week out in Spain.
Yeah, so to preface a race week for me, it's pretty kind of standard. If I have a race on a Saturday, then I do a workout on a Tuesday and then nothing else for the rest of the week, other than just some easy running. But this week, I actually had a race on a Sunday, which a lot of road races and stuff are on Sundays, but I've not raced on a Sunday for a while. So it meant that my workout was on a Wednesday, so... it might not seem too exciting, but there is a couple of good bits in the week.
And is that something you do for every race or?
Yeah, every race pretty much.
Just to make sure you're nice and fresh.
Yeah, and just to have one kind of tune-up workout, because otherwise two workouts and a race in a week is, you know, it's a little bit too much.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
So it's, you know, yeah. I've just got into the routine of it and it works, so keeping it the same for now. Cool. So this week started January 2nd, didn't it? That's right.
So, did indeed.
8 miles on Monday. I usually would basically have 12 miles, as I've explained on the pod before, and split this either kind of like 8 and 4 or 9 and 3. So 8 miles at 6:43s. I've put glorious, so it must have been a nice day. And I went at 11 a.m., so very leisurely. and came back in the afternoon for 3.28 miles at 6:56. So yeah, a 12-mile-ish, 11-and-a-bit-mile double on Monday.
Lovely stuff.
Tuesday, very similar. I did 8 miles on the dot, 8.00 at 6:40. And that one, ironically, says it rains from start to finish. So it's gone from glorious to rained the whole way in the space of a day. So I think that sums up the weather in England recently.
No surprises there then.
Not at all. Cool. So they're two pretty easy days to start the week. Wednesday was a little bit more exciting. And I had a track workout. I had 3x400, 1200, 3x400, 1200, and then 2x300. So essentially some 400 meter reps with about 200 meters jog in between. So it's around a minute. I do that in about a minute or 65 seconds. And then a 1200, which I get a 400 meter jog plus about, a 400 meter jog rounded up to 3 minutes after each of those. So it's not a massively strenuous workout in terms of the splits. You're probably running at around 5k pace for everything pretty much, for the 400s and the 1200s, and then some faster 300s at the end, just two of them. And I do these as what we call snowballs. So essentially every 100 meter split should be slightly faster than the last one. So at this time of year, I'll do them as around kind of 16 seconds, 15 seconds, 14 seconds, there or thereabouts, and kind of, you know, wind it up as it gets close to track season. I'll, you know, they'll come down to kind of 15, 14, 13 or something like that. So they get pretty quick in the end, but for now it's just a bit of leg turnover stuff. So that was a pretty good session, actually. It was, I was by myself because it was a Wednesday, so no one else really does any workouts. And it was a really windy day as well. It says 22 miles per hour winds here. So I think that's pretty, that's quite a lot on
that's
the track.
Pretty hefty, yeah.
Considering that, half the session you're obviously into the wind and half with it on your back. But when you've got 400s, it doesn't really, you know, doesn't make a difference.
Yeah, true.
So yeah, that was pretty good. Plus the warm-up and cool down, that was a pretty good day, around 10 mile day. So pretty good. Thursday I had 8.2 miles at 6:49s. I did all of that pretty much on the trails, try and save the legs a little bit. Slightly hilly route. Well, it's hilly for Cambridge, but you know, it's not hilly in the grand scheme of things.
Lovely little photo there on Strava as well. That pathway looks like it goes on forever.
Yeah, Wandlebury cycle track. You might know that, Tom, if you've ever been there. But yeah, pretty nice. Pretty nice place. Grass and mud are just fine. One, I find it more enjoyable, and two, psychologically, feels like you're taking a bit of load off your body, I think, sometimes. Yeah. So there's probably makes nothing sense. In it at all, but it's quite nice.
What are you wearing on your feet when you're doing those sorts of runs? Because it must be like absolutely filthy off-road at the moment. Mm. Like, my canal path is treacherous. I can't even contemplate the idea of going down there even. So like fields and that must be grim.
Yeah, so it's not really like it's trail, but it's very much like distinguished paths, if you see what I mean. It's not like just going out into a field. So I do just normally wear my road shoes, although I'll wear something that is a little bit on my lower priority of looking after, if that makes sense. Like, I'm not going to go out there in like Invincibles and then they're going to be ruined for when I want to use them on the road. Like, but I just tend to use just a general pair of road shoes. The Puma Deviate Nitro 2, actually, those shoes I mentioned in the 2022 awards, I literally use them for every terrain, so they're normally the go-to ones.
Got a little bit extra grip on the bottom as well, haven't they?
So. Ironically, they're white as well, so they're actually grey, my pair, now, after all the runs.
Perfect.
Yeah,
I don't condone that behaviour, by the way. I don't condone it one bit, but we'll move on.
Well, we'll wait for your week so we can have some shoes, fashion tips from you, Tom. Friday is that? Yeah. Friday, I did 5.45 miles at 6:58. This was supposed to be a bit of a longer route. Well, not longer, but it was supposed to be between 6 and 7 miles, and I've only done 5.5. I don't know about you guys, but when I've got somewhere to be during the day, so for example, this I had to get on a train to go to the airport, I get a bit kind of like tetchy about the time. I don't like cutting things fine, basically, is what I'm trying to say. So yeah. I gave myself way too much time to get the train and get to the airport because it was the strikes. I was, you know, thinking, oh, what about this? What about that? So use that as an excuse to take about 7 or 8 minutes off my run, which I probably didn't need to do. But 5.5 miles, pretty easy. Traveled to Spain on the Friday night. So we flew to Bilbao and then drove like 30, 40 minutes to a place called Eibar, which was a pretty nice place, actually. A bit of a weird place where, you know, when you turn up to kind of a, not a big city, but kind of, you know, a town, and you can't work out when you arrive whether it's really sort of nice, cultural, you know, looks kind of like a bit rustic is what I'm going to go for. Or whether it's just really worn down and an absolute shithole. Do you know what I mean? We arrived in the dark, so I couldn't really work it out. And I looked out my hotel window and I was like, I'm either going to wake up in the morning and like, this is going to be look like, oh, fantastic. Look at the hills in the background. And like, yeah, it's a bit worn down, but you know, it's just part and parcel of being in the countryside. Or I'm going to think, yeah, this is just a shithole. And I've still not made my mind up. I've been there for 3 days. I've come back and I still can't really work out whether it was a nice place or not. Alas, we move on. Saturday, went to the course to have a look around, do a bit of a jog. Just a regular pre-meet for me, basically. So 4.5 miles, which included some strides. I always do the same strides, pretty much 4 times 100 meters, and then either 1 or 2 200s. And we actually had a track where this part of the course was on the track, so I could do that there, which was nice.
What did you think of the course on your recon?
Yeah, so I was going to bring this up on the race, actually, but you'll see in my caption that I've mentioned mud, grass, track, gravel and hills. And basically the whole day, we were just basically debating what kind of spikes we would need, whether we'd need everything from kind of 9 mil spikes all the way up to wanting 15 mil spikes. Because on this course, it was pouring down with rain, really windy. Yeah. And all the grass section, which I would say is probably half a lap, so I reckon a lap was about 2.5K. All of the grass was the worst mud I've ever run in my life. Worse than any mud I've run in England. It was like thick clay, just like deep, horrible mud.
Really did look hot. Pretty horrific. I watched the live stream and the state of your legs at the end of that. Absolutely caked in it.
I know. I took half of Spain back with me to the hotel, obviously. I'm telling you. So half the course was like that. So you'd automatically go, cool, longer spikes, the better. Fantastic. But then you will have seen you had to go on some like AstroTurf, like artificial grass. And then you had to do a lap around the track, which obviously you don't want a 15 mil spike on the track. Like there's a reason people don't do that. Do you know what I mean? It's not beneficial.
Yeah.
And then you had to
probably end up falling over as well, wouldn't you? Yeah. Not 15 mils on.
And you feel like you're going to get stuck in the track kind of, especially if they're sharp. Yeah. And then you had to go onto some kind of like gravel where it was soft, but ultimately it still had a hard layer underneath. So it was one of these courses where honestly you wish you could have done a pit stop at each bit and just put on some more preferable shoes, but obviously it doesn't work like that. So in the end, opted for 12 mil spikes, which seemed like a good decision, to be honest.
And in the middle.
I felt
happy
fine.
Medium. Yeah.
Yeah. I felt fine when I was running. That may as well mention the day of the race. It was 10.8K ish. That's what, about 6.7 miles, 6.8 miles, something like that. I finished in 17th overall, which is a weird one because often when I find when you, and you guys might have found similar when you're racing, is if you're not racing for, like, you've got to give yourself something to race for, if you see what I mean. Obviously, if you're racing to win something, you're in a top, you know, top one or two, then you're racing to win. If you're, you know, fourth or fifth, you're racing to try and get on the podium. But when you're a bit lower down, you've got to kind of reassess and set yourself some targets. And, you know, fortunately in a race like this, the field is so deep that you know from the start you're going to have some intermediate targets. Whether that, for me in this case, was like, you know, trying to get as close to some of the other England guys as I could that focus on this as like a specialist distance, trying to kind of beat some guys that I know are professional and are sponsored that are from Europe, because that's kind of a nice little confidence booster for yourself. So yeah, the race was great. I run without a watch always for cross country, and it was only afterwards that I looked at Thomas' watch, who was also running, and he ran a 4:43 first mile, and I was next to him. So
it's insane.
But what you got to remember is, like, it started with a lap around the track, so it was always going to be fast. We ran like a 65-second first lap or something like that.
Yeah, 65 seconds.
But when you've warmed up so thoroughly, like, it's a weird one. Like, maybe this is like a lack of, not discipline, but kind of experience. But you've been away for 3 days at this point. You know, you're essentially going to a different country. You've been there for 3 days, all for this one 10K race. and you've done all your thorough warm-up, you're like ready to go, and then you're starting with a lap around the track. Like, there's in no world is that going to be slow, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. Sure. Everyone's sort of hustling for position before they go out onto the course as well. So if someone goes out fast, then everyone goes fast.
Exactly that. But the one great thing was it didn't feel fast, honestly. It felt like a great first mile, and it was so like good to be around some of the runners. I remember looking up on the first lap around the track, and just Borrego was right there in front of me in the full night kit. And I was incredible. Like, this is nuts. I was like, there's Borrego right there. I was like soak this in, because you're not going to be with him for like much more than a minute, if you know what I mean. Like, he's only going to be there for a little bit. And the nice thing about the course was it was so twisty and turny that probably for like the first 3K, the front group were only a little bit of ahead of us. So I could actually see them and like how they were racing, and like, you're in your own race, but at the same time, I kept thinking, like, bloody hell, like, this is quality, isn't it? Like, I wish I could watch it as a fan. I'm like, I wonder what's going on at the front, sort of thing.
The live stream was incredible. I don't know if you saw any of it, Tom.
No, I didn't manage to catch it, actually.
It was all in Spanish, so in terms of the actual commentary, you can really, like, follow what was going on. But the course was incredible, and they had, like, drone coverage of, like, following the athletes up the hill. And, yeah, as Callum was saying, you literally had a bit of everything. There was track, there was these... It almost looked like a mountain that you were running up the side of, sort of a gravel path. Mm-hmm. And then just randomly you're running around the back of, like, around the back of a sports facility or something like that.
Yeah, exactly that. So there was like a motorbike that was filming us going up that hill, and the motorbike was on kind of like a cycle path type thing, like a basically a pedestrian path, and there was just a bit of a grass verge, like where you'd park your car on a street in England, like just a bit of grass, and they were like, yeah, that's where you're going to be running. It was weird.
That's strange.
Yeah, great race and like great experience. It's like steeped in history, the race. You go to like a little celebration thing in the town the night before, and they do a parade and have music and show all the past winners from previous years, and you know, all that kind of thing. It's really like the whole town comes out. It's quite a big deal, and then they, you know, lay on hospitality to go to the football match of like the local team for the night of the race, with like complimentary tickets for everyone and stuff. So no, it's really good to have the experience to go out and do these kind of races. And
yeah, for sure.
Kind of the biggest takeaway for me is not even like related to the running. Like, I'm really pleased with the performance, you know, beating some great people, finished, you know, 10 seconds behind, you know, Olympians and stuff like that. So it's fantastic. But it's mainly how I think I've gained experience over the last few races that I wasn't at all nervous for this one. Really had no nerves at all. Wasn't thinking that, oh, I've got to do this. There was no expectation. It was very much like, you know, I'm enjoying my time. I understand how all the processes work now of having to do, you know, a call room or be here at this time, or you have to give your passport before you can get through onto the track to race. And like, all these kind of little things that you don't consider that would kind of build up in your mind and be like, oh God, I've got to think about all these things. I actually felt super relaxed and smooth going through it. So I think that's why it's important for like, you know, England Athletics and stuff to give people like me opportunities that haven't had them previously. Because once you get them, even if there is other people that could run faster than you, it's a really like good kind of skill for your career to have, to like tick that box. And I now know, like, if I go and race in Europe or I do whatever by myself and I don't have a coach there, a team there, whoever, like, I'll be fine. I know what to do.
Yeah.
See what I mean? Which is kind of 100%. It's a really underrated thing about these kind of events, I think.
Yeah. I've got a few questions for you quickly, Callum.
Mm-hmm.
First one, for someone like myself who isn't necessarily that embedded in the world of cross country, what exactly was this race? What you say it's you know, got lots of history and all the rest of it. What is the significance of it? What is it for? First of all,
we probably should have mentioned that. So this is it's the El Gobar International Cross Country. I think it's named like the Juan something. It's named after someone in recent years, I think. I don't actually like know who that is, but I think this was the 79th year that it's run. It's been around for literally ages. There's quite a lot of Brits that have won it previously in the past, either at a junior or a senior level. But even going back through the program and like looking at some people that have previously won it, like Bekele's done it and won it. That's Borrego's second time winning it. Chelimo's been there. Literally, like, you know, a lot of top Africans have done it, as whether it be a kind of, you know, a tune up for something, or in this case to get points. So the other good thing about this race is that this year it was a World Gold Tour event. So for people that don't know, World Athletics put on events that are either a gold, silver, bronze or challenger event, and they rank in significance. And the gold event is sort of the harder one to get into, the track where you need certain qualifying times, but mm-hmm. they reward the highest points value in your international ranking. So for people that are trying to qualify for European Championships and World Championships, the way the system works now is 50% of the places will be taken by time qualifiers. So you'll get the time, you'll go to British Champs, you'll finish in the top two and you'll get picked. 50% of participants will come from the ranking. So they'll go through the ranking and they'll fill the however many spots they need based on who's there. So racing in something like this for a lot of people, and that's why it was a who's who of having Olympians and world champions and stuff there, is because they can finish, you know, in the top 10 or wherever it is and get some really good ranking points. Mm-hmm. So it does bring out, you know, a lot of people from the woodwork, if you will, and people like Borrega, who has kind of got no business winning a race like this, is the Olympic champion, comes to make sure that he can get some points.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I love it. Yeah,
so it makes for wicked dynamic. There's people like you getting your first opportunity to go to an event like that, and you've got the world champion at the front just showing you how it's done, basically.
Yeah, literally incredible. It is. But it's great. Like, I was listening to another podcast with Emil Carrez the other day, and he put it so well. He was like, I can't remember what event he was talking about specifically, but he was like, sometimes you need to go to a race and you need to just get spanked and realize like the serious levels that there are to the sport.
Yeah.
And realize like, bloody hell, like I thought I was decent, or like, I know I'm pretty good for like my city or my country, whatever. But like, these are the serious levels. These are the people that are living, breathing, training the sport. And this is how good you can be. So to turn up, and I know it's the Olympic champ, but for someone to run 2 minutes quicker than you or 3 minutes quicker than you over 10K, it makes you think, right, you know, motivates you to keep progressing, which I think is really important, no matter what level you're at the sport, to kind of not take it as a negative when people do better than you or think you're a million miles away, but actually think, Luminel, you know, I'm doing all right here, but look how much better I can, you know, push on to do. So yeah, it was a really good week actually, and I'm not racing for a while now, so it was good to have a positive experience to fuel me for the next kind of month or so of training before I look to race again.
Yeah, I love that. And yeah, I think I listened to the same podcast. Sunday podcast.
Yeah.
Really good listen if anyone's interested with Emil Carrez. Yeah, that's a lovely week and a nice detailed race recap. Hopefully I have many more of them this year.
Yeah, fingers crossed. We'll have some ones where we finish higher than 17th, but who knows? It's a good start.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
great start. Thanks for sharing that with us.
Yeah. Who's up next?
Oh,
go on. I'll go. We'll do a little sandwich, because mine's not as interesting. But yeah, as I said in the intro, every week at the moment for me should be the best week of training so far, as I continue to build back. And this one was no exception. So it was a little bit of a different start to the week, to be honest. Recently, and the way that my weeks normally work with Andy is you'll do like just easy on Monday, steady or a progression run on a Tuesday, and then a session on a Wednesday. But then this mm-hmm. week we were straight into a steady run. So steady 5 miles, just over 8K, at 3:54 pace. And I've put a sunshine emoji on this one, Callum. So I think I was feeling the vibes of the weather as well. Yeah. And typically, again, this was the only day of the week where the weather was even remotely pleasant. But yeah, that was just over 8K at 3:54 pace, and then did 4x100 meter strides afterwards. Ready for a session on Tuesday. And yeah, was back to work on Tuesday after the festive period. And previously, like throughout the whole marathon block and before that, I was always a morning runner. I'd always get up and get the runs done, no matter how long, whether it was 20 miles or just like an easy 30 minutes. I'd always, almost always anyway, do them before work. I'm definitely like a morning runner. I just feel so much better throughout the day. But over that Christmas period and over the last few months where I haven't been running that much, it's been so easy to just like, if I've only got 30 minutes to do, I'll just do it at lunchtime, or I'll just do it after work, because it doesn't make any difference. So this Tuesday was the first morning in a while where the alarm went off like before 7 o'clock. And let me tell you, it was a rude awakening. When you're not used to waking up early, especially this time of year, my God, it's so hard. And I questioned how, like this time last year, I used to just do it on autopilot. You just wake up 6:30, get out the door, get your session done, and then get back to start work at 9. But this was tough. to wake up.
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that. This time of the year, it's sort of, it's hard to get back in the routine of things after some downtime, isn't it? But yeah, credit, you started this run at 8 o'clock in the morning, a session at 8 o'clock in the morning. That's pretty good going.
Yeah, that and that was cutting it fine, to be honest. But yeah, started the warm up 7:43 for the warm up actually, just a couple of k, but plus some standard drills and strides, and then the session itself was 5x k and then 5x400, and the goal really, what I was prescribed anyway, was to start off with those k reps fairly conservatively, so about 3:40, and then gradually work down by about five seconds. They ended up being closer to about 10 seconds, I think. And then yeah, the 5 400s afterwards were meant to be in about 80 odd seconds. And again, like what you say, Callum, it was very, very, very windy this day. So Strava's saying it's about 30 kilometer hour winds and felt like 6 degrees. It's just miserable. Like, it's really not very pleasant when it's you know, cold, wet and windy all together, and it's early in the morning. But yeah, anyway, we started off, first K was in 3:38, 3:36, and then what did I do for the next one? 3:30, 3:20, and then 3:16 for the last K.
Nice.
And yeah, not nice little progression, and felt really good on all of those, to be honest. 90 seconds rest in between those, and that felt like plenty, was nicely recovered in between reps. So happy with that felt. And then about 2.5 minutes recovery before going into the 400s. And these were tricky to judge because I don't have a track particularly locally. The nearest one's Bath, which is like, 15 odd minutes on the train. And then you got a fair way from the station to the track. So it's most of the time it's not worth going.
You don't want to be doing that at 8 o'clock in the morning. No, either, really.
Definitely not. Definitely not. So these 400s were just done out and back on the same road loop. So it's a little bit tricky to judge, especially when it's windy, because it kind of worked out that I either had tailwind and a slight uphill, or like headwind and the downhill. So I went 80, 73, got a bit carried away, and then 76, 75, 76 for the 400s.
And so, was that a prescribed pace for those, or was that off feel?
Yeah, so they were meant to be in about 80 seconds.
Okay.
And so, yeah, it was a little bit quick, but yeah, like I say, it's just hard to judge when you're on an out and back type road.
Yeah, you can't sort of look when you go through 200 meters and think, track, like you can when you're on the track. So,
yeah,
I know what you mean.
So yeah, hey, I think
Tom, have you had any before this, by the way, because it's a session.
good question. No. So, if I'm running early in the morning, I will very rarely eat beforehand. It's with the exception of like, obviously, if I'm running 20 miles, I'll normally wake up early enough that I'll just have like a peanut butter bagel and a banana or something like an hour before. And then I'll take a couple of gels, either to take strategically at certain increments throughout the run, or just if I'm flagging a bit and I need some sort of fuel. But on a session like this, you know, it's like 9K of total volume, 35 minutes of running. Like, I really don't need anything. And I found previously, if I have tried to eat before a session this early in the morning, it never really settles that well. And I feel a bit gassy whilst I'm warming up, and like just heartburny and unpleasant.
Do you have any caffeine?
No. Don't even have a coffee.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Getting up that early without a coffee. I don't know how you do it.
Yeah, I'm running 76 second 400s as well. Fair play.
Yeah. It was, like I say, I think I'm just used to it. Like, it's how I've always done it. I've experimented with trying to eat beforehand, and it's just, I either have to wake up so early that it's just not worth it to me, or it just doesn't sit very well, and you're either feeling uncomfortable during the session or diving in the bushes, which has happened many, many times. And yeah, nobody wants that. So yeah, just about a mile jog home after that, and was pretty happy with that one, to be honest, given the conditions and the early start and everything, felt pretty good. Which brings us on to Wednesday, which was just an easy 5 miles. Nothing particularly to report there. I put in my Strava caption, I nearly slipped to my death on some wet leaves, which was unpleasant. I was running on the road and went to step up onto the pavement, and it was just like soggy leaves, which acted as ice. And I managed to catch myself, but my heart was in my mouth for a split second. horrible bloody feeling that. Wednesday. And then again, as has been typical for the last few weeks, mandatory rest day on Thursday. Easy 30 minutes on Friday. Shout out to Cooper Berry as well, who commented on that, saying the famous out and back loop.
He's obviously been listening.
Yeah, I don't quite know how famous it is. But yeah, I'm glad that the route into Trowbridge is getting the recognition it deserves.
If anyone follows Tom on Strava, I'm sure you've got some kind of privacy settings on around your like house, which is fine, obviously. But if you want to do a bit of research on a long run, try and find a loop that takes 30 minutes to run around at about 7:30 a mile.
Yeah, honestly, please do. Please do. And it has to be paved as well at the moment because we'll get into it when we talk about my, not really long run, but my run on Sunday. But yeah, the country roads are a mess at the moment. So if you can do that for me, find me a nice little loop, I'll be eternally grateful. but yeah, that brings us on to Saturday, which is another session. A little windy warm up, a couple of K to the same housing estate as Tuesday session. 36 kilometer winds for this one, so even windier. And yeah, this was a 10K progression, which was a nice little step up from the 5K progression I did. Was it a week or two ago? Can't remember. But anyway, it's nice to be up in the volume in these sessions a little bit. And the aim here really was to cut them down in blocks of three. So you know, 3, 6, 9, and then a 1K just push at the end is what Andy said. Goal was to start about 4 minute Ks, just a little bit under, and then gradually work down from there. So get the splits up. Yeah, was started off about 3:55 and ended at about 3:30 odd pace for the 9K, and then that last K push was 3:15, which
to be solid. Still got some speed in there.
I was quite happy how that felt, to be honest, because that's that 5x K session I did. That's the same pace as the fastest rep I did, but off the back of, you know, 9K of steady running. So I was happy with how I felt throughout that, to be honest. It was one of those where, you know, those beautiful days when you're running and it feels almost harder to run slower, if that makes sense. Like you get into a rhythm and you're running a little bit faster than what you should be running, but it feels so good that it's almost unnatural to slow down. Running with the brakes on, basically.
Almost like getting into that flow state. For me, it doesn't happen too often, but maybe like once or twice a month that you get going, and I can definitely relate to that.
I think it's testament to feeling fresh. I think that's a big thing. Like the fact that, you know, you are coming back around into some fitness. A lot of people would have tended to, when you said you ran, you know, you had your rest day Thursday and then I think Wednesday or whatever, you ended 30 minutes or something like that, would have thought, oh, I'll just do 45 or I'm back to fitness, I'll just do 50, and would have chased a few extra miles to make the week kind of sit a bit prettier, sort of, you know, oh, I'd got up to X mileage. But instead, you were pretty disciplined with what Andy's told you. And I think as a result, you felt really fresh for your session on Saturday. And I've come off, you know, feeling really good about it, if you know what I mean. Whereas, you know, it could have easily been the other way and you could have had some more volume and felt, you know, oh, at least I got some volume in, but felt a bit shit on your 10K progression.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And I know big Andy Hobdell listens to the podcast now. He's a regular listener, so he'll probably be, celebrating at you saying that, punching the air at you saying that, Callum.
Nice one, Andy.
I think that's exactly it. Like Andy has got no qualms with giving you a solid amount of quality back to back. Like I remember fairly early on in the marathon build, I had a pretty long and fairly hard progression run on a Wednesday, like a big marathon session, like, you know, I can't remember the exact volume, but it was well over 12 miles, I think, in total. And then a 10K race on the Friday. So three big days back to back. And he's got no issue with giving you something like that just to when you're robust enough to do it. But at the moment, I'm just having to trust the process and accept the caution that he's showing. And so far, I can't argue with his methodology at all. It's working really well with just subtly getting back into fitness without really feeling like I'm running much at all, which is what you want really in an ideal world, isn't it? It's great having that. I'm sure it's the same for you, Ben. When you're running 100 miles a week, there's a certain level of satisfaction that you get from being sore and feeling that level of fatigue where you are just run down, but you know it's because of the work that you've put in, and you it feels good. It's like a nice discomfort almost. So I don't have any of that at the moment. Like, I'm desperate to run more, but I'd much rather be feeling like that than be feeling like, oh, Andy, I don't know if I can do this session today, or my legs are a bit tired, so I might just run instead of 45 or whatever it may be. So yeah, I'm enjoying the process of just subtly building back into fitness. And that brings us to Sunday, which is technically my longest sustained run for months, which is, I don't want to say embarrassing, because it's not embarrassing, but it's interesting. And this was 50 minutes. How you feel is what was prescribed. And again, with Andy's terminology, you don't really get the standard stuff like tempo, threshold, or anything like that. It's normally recovery, which means he just wants you to really plod along and actually, you know, go as easy as you can. Mm-hmm. Easy, steady, easy to steady, or how you feel. And the way I take how you feel is like, start off, you know, obviously start off easy. Don't go gunning it straight out the door. But if after a good and you're just naturally finding a rhythm where you're running a bit quicker, then, you know, stick to it and just find that sweet spot for that day. Don't push on for the sake of it to run certain splits. But at the same time, don't force yourself to run slow if you don't want to. So, yeah, this was 50 minutes at 405 per K pace, just over 12K, 12.3K. And to prove that I can run loops, this is my favorite loop. It's the Westwood loop. I don't think anybody who listens is going to know anything of any sort of relation to that, but it's a really nice hilly loop around Bradford on Avon, where it's rolling the whole way. So it starts off of a pretty brutal hill, but then from there on you go down and up and down and up the entire way. So it's just
I'm looking at the map. Am I right in thinking that your out and back is included in this loop?
Technically, yeah.
Yeah, because I was just wanting to check, because I saw that you're the local legend. So I was like, if this guy's the local legend and he's only done this loop for the first, we've been recording for a month now. This is the first time you've done the loop. I was like, who runs in Bradford upon Avon if not? But you must have done part of your out and back within the loop.
Yeah. So I'm the local legend for Trowell Common, which I'm absolutely over the moon with that.
And you've done four efforts in 90 days and you're the local legend.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most buzzing running town in the world. I see there's one old bloke that I see almost every day. And he's in some proper like vintage Asics, like Kayanos or something from 20 years ago, and he's always out there chugging away. So yeah, I like this loop because I always see him when I do it. But yeah, it was nice to have a run long enough to do this loop and not just the same old out and back.
Love it. What's that mileage for the week then?
That brought me up to 62.57 kilometers for the week.
Brilliant stuff.
Yeah. So yeah, we're building slowly. Next week should be bigger than that. And then within say 3 or 4 weeks, I should be back to running what I'm used to. And yeah, got first race of the year in the calendar as well, which is quite exciting.
Very exciting. Which one's that?
So I'm gonna do the London Winter 10K on the 5th of February with Hoka.
Oh, lovely.
So yeah, should be a good one. Nice little rust buster to, I don't know what Andy's going to want me to do, but hopefully you'll just say, have fun, run hard and see.
Have you looked at the race results from last year?
Oh no, I've got absolutely no idea. It's just...
You might have the reigning world champion, the reigning champion amongst us here, and it wasn't Callum. Have you noticed?
Oh,
really?
Yeah, London Winter Run champion 2022.
Are you doing it this year, Ben?
I'm not doing it this year, no.
Right, Tom, you've got to get the crown, mate. I'm telling you.
You've got to get it.
Keep it in the pod.
It's incredible. Crossing that finish line in central London, crowd going absolutely
wild.
And
the great thing is, The best thing is Andy's listening. So, Andy, you heard it here. He has to go for the win. So,
what did you run last time, Ben? What did you run?
Nothing quick at all. Probably, like, I think about 32, 33 minutes for 10K.
Okay.
It's a very windy course. There's probably about 5 or 6 hairpin bends. So, it's definitely not one for a PB, to be honest with you. Don't want to put a downer on it. But it's a great event. It's good fun.
Did you say you're running with Hoka?
Yeah, so it's obviously one of the main perks of one of the many perks of working for ProDirect is like just having good relationships with these brands, and the Hoka are sponsoring it this year. We've got race entries, and I should be able to get a pair of the Rocket X2.
That's what I was going to ask.
So Joseph Wade, who works for Hoka, he managed to wangle a pair that was sent back from an athlete or something. So I might be borrowing his pair because we're the same size. Because it was either that or do it in the Clifton 9. And as much as that's going to be a great mileage shoe, I don't fancy racing a 10K in it. It's like my first race back since London Marathon. So fingers crossed, he'll let me borrow his pair. And we'll see what the Rocket X2 is all about.
Exciting stuff. Yeah. Righty-ho, that goes on to my week then, I suppose.
It does indeed.
This was I've called it my week one of 8 in the lead up to Osaka. This week I've had a pretty good week. Finally felt like I've been able to actually get some running in again after what's felt like, I think, about 8 weeks of setbacks. Nothing major, like no major injuries or anything like that. But I've just had like colds, and then I think I had the flu a few weeks ago, and a few little post Valencia niggles to sort of get over. But this week was the first week I finally felt somewhat myself again and been able to get some good mileage in this week. So it was a bit of a jump from my previous weeks, I think up to around 138 kilometers for the week. So yeah, quite a big jump. But I made sure I kept things quite sensible this week in terms of the intensity. So I'd say the volume of my training has gone up dramatically, but the intensity has sort of stayed the same. I've done a lot of easy running, and the sessions that I have done, I've tried to keep a lid on it and undercook them rather than overcook them as I sort of build up again. And obviously only having 8 weeks to train for a marathon is not ideal. So it has been a bit of a jump, which is a risk. But it's one of those that I've got to sort of weigh up. I've got to go for it now, really, if I'm going to get in any sort of shape come Osaka at the end of February. So yeah, going into my week, we'll start with Monday. I've called this 8 weeks to get marathon fit. 10 kilometers at 4:33. This is one of my favorite loops from the house. It's a nice loop, not an out and back. I'll take you on that one day, Tom, if you're ever in Hatfield Peveril.
Well, it'll be an honor.
It's a lovely route. And the sun was shining, as we said, for that one. I remember having a great time out there. I think it's probably the first run I've had in about 4 or 5 weeks where it's actually felt enjoyable, which is, it's sad, really, because my running has been quite difficult over the last few weeks as I've been fighting these various little setbacks. So to get a good run in was a great start to the week. And I thought, yes, finally, I'm starting to feel a bit more like myself. That takes me on to Monday evening.
Can I ask you a quick question?
Yeah, no problem.
Just looking on your Strava, a lot of people are asking if there's going to be a Road to Osaka YouTube series. Is that something you're thinking of doing? Will there be any videos or anything?
Yeah, there's it's in the works. I'm currently just waiting on confirmation from a sponsor, actually, to whether they're up for getting involved. And if they are, then episode one's in the pipelines already. It's all edited. I just need to get the green light, basically, from them. So that takes me on to Monday evening. That was my weekly strength and conditioning session with Meg's cousin Hannah. We go down to the gym, do that together. Circuit training style and workout, squats, lunges, all the basics, not too heavy. It's very much how I like to do my strength and conditioning, more just to prevent injury more than anything. And then when I got home, I had a 5 kilometer easy run in the plan, and I managed to convince my housemate Charlie to come out with me for this one. So we did a couple of laps of the block in the dark, both had our alpha flies on and averaged 4:56 per kilometre. So A very easy recovery run in a lovely pair of shoes.
Why have you done that?
Yeah, talk to me, Ben, because I know that there's people who will absolutely slate you for wearing.
I know.
I got slated for wearing Alpha.
Yeah, one of them's on the podcast. He's right here.
I'm sorry, but basically Charlie came down the stairs in his fresh white pair, and I thought, you know what, I've got my pair in the box there. They're coming out as well.
You're such a child, Ben.
I know. I can't help myself.
So easily influenced.
Yeah, so we both plodded around to the sound of our chunky ZoomX Alpha Flies on the ground, and that was a good run. We had some music blaring as well. Probably had some good funny looks from the locals, but around our area,
music blaring
that sort of time. Yeah, Charlie had his phone out.
Ed Goddard. Well,
Ed Goddard style.
Yeah, exactly. So that was a good way to finish the Monday. Then moving on to Tuesday, I've decided to use the same approach I basically used for my first marathon that I think went pretty well out in Copenhagen in May time last year. I ran 2:28 using this sort of training principle. So it's the classic double threshold sessions made famous by the Ingebrigtsen brothers. And I tried this just for a bit of a try, the basically because it's been a bit of a fad, and really enjoyed it and found myself getting really fit. And I find it applies to a good range of distances as well. I've decided to use this double threshold plan moving forward. So threshold one on Tuesday morning was 2 by 10 minutes. This session would traditionally be 3 by 10 minutes for me, but as I was easing back into threshold work, and I've said here, fitness is in the bin at the moment. I decided just to keep things sensible. 20 minutes of threshold is more than enough at my current fitness level. And my average pace for the reps was 3:23 per kilometer, I did this one on the treadmill, I think. Yeah, that's why there's no map. That would make sense. So yeah, 11 miles per hour. And in my peak fitness at the end of November, I was averaging around 12 miles per hour. So around 3:07, 5 minutes per mile. So fitness has taken a little bit of a hit of late, but it's good to get things back rolling. Moving on to my evening threshold session. This one was down at my track. I don't own it, but Chelmsford track with my athletics club. Did a nice warm up together. Classic 3.4k loop. Sometimes people say it looks like an elephant. Doesn't look like much like an elephant tonight.
I can see it. It's abstract, but I can.
Yeah,
see
it. Yeah. A little bit. Sometimes when you do a few laps of the track, you can get a face, but it's a bit far fetched, I think. And then the evening session was 8 by 800 meters. This again would usually be 10 by 800. Off 60 seconds. And I did this session with Joe. Shout out to Joe. We just cruised around again at 3:24 per kilometer pace. So I think we averaged 2:43 for the 800s, which should feel very, very easy for me. But at the moment, coming back into fitness, that feels like threshold effort at the moment. And looking at my heart rate data, it was around 170 for the rep. So pretty much spot on for that one as well. And a nice little warm down.
I know you're saying, Ben,
Tuesday.
I think the way you're framing it is because it's your training, is you almost see it in a slightly negative light, if you see what I mean. But actually, I think it's really important that you're training to your current fitness. It's what a lot of us don't do, especially when people get prescribed stuff like, oh, do this at 5K pace or 10K pace. People just take their PB and use that as the pace. And no matter what 100%. Caliber of runner you are, you're not always going to be in that peak form. So whether it's, you know, 90 seconds a lap is your 5K pace, for example, if you're a runner, then that's when you ran your 5K PB. That's what you could do. Doesn't necessarily mean that if you just pick a random day and you do a session to 5K pace, it's going to be the same. And you won't
improve
if you keep going over that red line. So actually, I think it's a great example this week of your two sessions where you've probably had to swallow that pride a little bit and have the slower splits on Strava, which no one likes doing. Everyone wants to have, you know, a flying session. But ultimately, you'll be better off for it in 2 weeks' time than if you'd pushed it all the way and kind of, you know, not got.
Yeah, for sure. I probably could have pushed both these sessions a little bit faster. And like you said, had a bit more of impressive splits. But at this point, I'm just happy to bank sessions and try and build things back slowly. And I hope that will benefit me moving forward, because I've definitely been one in the past to just train to say 5k pace, 10k pace, when in reality that's more like, I don't know, 3k, 5k pace due to current fitness. So yeah, some good advice there. If you're coming back to fitness, you don't have to thrash every session, and try if you can not to compare them to other sessions. But yeah, that moves on to my, what day will that be? Wednesday.
Before you do that, Ben.
Yeah, no problem.
Just quickly. On your threshold stuff, have you ever been tempted to get like a lactate reader and do all of that gubbins? Or are you just happy to do it by effort? Do you want to see what you know, what your millimoles are after?
Yeah, I think I would be interested to see what it is for those. But for these threshold efforts, I use two sort of guidelines, if you like. The first one is heart rate. So I like to keep the reps all in between that 170, 175 beats per minute. So when I'm running these threshold efforts, I'm constantly checking my my heart rate. And that's one thing I like to check on. And yeah, the other is just effort on the day. It's about a 7 out of 10 on the effort level. And if I keep it at that sort of effort throughout the training block, then I can gradually see the pace hopefully increase over time. So I would like to look at lactate measurements, but I haven't really got around to doing that. I think for me at my sort of level at the moment, it's not super important, but it would be interesting to see for sure.
Yeah, fair enough.
So yeah, that takes me to Wednesday, just to 12 kilometers, nice and easy, 4:33 per kilometer. And then that takes me to my Thursday double threshold day. So yeah, that Wednesday, I like to keep it nice and easy. 4:33 actually is a little bit on the quicker side for my usual Wednesday Wednesday run in between these threshold days. But yeah, on Thursday, the morning session was 6 by 5 minutes at threshold effort again. Average off 60 seconds standing recovery. And this is on my favorite loop from the house in the little village of Nonsley. And again, average pace per rep was 3:27 per kilometer. So again, that pace is a little bit slower than my target marathon pace. But at the moment, that's probably the pace that I would be able to run for an hour. So yeah, I'm pretty happy with that session. It went well. Again, it was a case of just ticking another one off rather than any heroics there. And that one was done nice and early as well at 8:30 in the morning. I had a meeting in the late morning, so it was good to get that one done early. And then my evening session on Thursday, again, back down at the track in Chelmsford, classic warm-up, and it was then 20 by 400 metres with 45 seconds recovery. And this is one of my favourite sessions in the threshold training principle to do, because I find you can always do a 400 meter rep and it feels quite comfortable. And yeah, this is probably the best session of the week for me. Was feeling nice and smooth. And I wore the Metaspeed Edge Plus for this one. I really like that shoe on the track. It's just has a little bit more ground contact feel than some of the other super shoes that have a bit more stack height. So I find that works really well on the track. And for this one, paces were 75 seconds average per lap for a 3:08 per kilometer. So yeah, another good double threshold day, around about 28 29 kilometers of volume for that Thursday session.
Lovely stuff
exactly. And then that I'll quickly go through the rest of the week, because it wasn't too interesting. Friday I did 18 kilometers at 4:41. This day I was meant to do an 8 kilometer run in the morning and then a 10 kilometer run in the evening, but we had a flat tire on the car, so we had to get that sorted in the morning. And I actually bumped into a friend out on this run. So I shared some miles with him, hence why the graph on Strava looks a little bit funky. On Saturday morning, I got up nice and early, about 7:30. We were out for a morning run, me and my Chelmsford teammate Seb. I had heavy legs this day, I think, from the double threshold session on Thursday. I often find that my legs are fine the day after, but then 2 days after, you get those DOMs set in. So yeah, legs were heavy on this day. We just did 12 kilometers at 4:42 per kilometer, which again is easy effort. And that finally brings me on to my final run of the week. To round it off was the classic Sunday long run. And I've got here written moving in the right direction. So I'm obviously feeling like I've had a good week, which is always nice. I took two carb gels for this one, thanks to Callum, actually. The OTE
carb gels. OTE super gels, not the normal gels, the super gels.
Yeah, that's right. The super gels for this one. I had one at 45 minutes and one at 90 minutes. With these long runs, this one was 28 kilometers. They're going to slowly build up over the next few weeks. And I'm trying to keep my heart rate in around that 150 to 160 beats per minute. And for this run, I averaged 155. So spot on. So it's kind of like in that steady category. And as Tom was saying with his long runs, if I'm feeling good, I might push these on a little bit towards the end. But I was pretty happy with that. Wore the Mizuno Rebellion Pros, the shoe that I'm going to be wearing out in Osaka. And yeah, they feel lovely for this sort of pace. And it was good to round off the week with a good long run.
And you wore the best arm sleeves in the world, didn't you?
I did indeed. Yeah, saw running arm sleeves. I always like to put them on, and it always makes me feel a little bit faster, you know.
They honestly do.
Yeah, you put some nice kit on and it just makes you feel nice and puts you in a good positive headspace, and then
yeah, 100%. Yeah,
you can get going.
To see you wore the Rebellion Pros for this. How did they feel like, you know, once you get above 10 miles and into kind of the final stages of that long run, were they still comfy and still feeling good? Because I've literally not taken mine. I don't think I've done more than like 10k or 12k of volume in them in one go.
I find them really comfortable, actually. The upper on is excellent. I would say towards the end of the run, I started to notice that the heel section of the shoe isn't there like it would be with other shoes. When I get a bit tired, I tend to heel strike a little bit. So you do have to remind yourself to sort of stay up on the midfoot onto the toes, because the shoe has quite a unique geometry. But overall, really enjoyed the run in those. And I'm sure if I can just build up that long run over the next few weeks, I should have no problems covering the 42-kilometre distance out in Osaka.
Lovely. The only other question on your long run, Ben, your first K was in 3:30.
It was indeed.
Yeah, how did that happen, or why did that happen? And
not is
that
really
fresh
sure
out
to be
the
honest.
Door, by the way, is that like yes. out the door first K 3:30?
Straight out the door. It is downhill the first kilometer, so that would probably explain why it's maybe 10-15 seconds quicker than the others. But it's just a case of running to feel. For this run, I have my splits turned off, so I wasn't even aware that I'd run at a quicker first kilometer for that one. I just like to just get out and run to effort. So that explains it, really.
Yeah,
please don't do it again.
Try not to.
No, I'm only kidding. But once Jake Smith was on a podcast, I love Jake Smith, by the way, great guy. And he said, again, this might be another Sunday podcast, giving them another plug. I think it was on this is ages ago. And he was like, yeah, I can honestly just run 6-minute miles out the door. Like, it really isn't a problem for me. Like, I don't know why other people need to warm up. And then, like, 9 months later, he got like a terrible injury. So, just be careful.
For sure. I did actually do some stretching and sort of activation stuff in the kitchen before this run, which may explain that. I wouldn't usually do that, but I was a little bit nervous. I'm not going to lie, having the first sort of longer run of the block. So maybe that explains it.
No, good on you. Get the wheels turning.
And that gives you 138 kilometres for the week, which is, very nice.
Yeah, very good. Hopefully I can keep that trending in the right direction now. And keep banking some good weeks.
Perfect. Very
so,
good.
So, shall we do some running news this week?
What's been happening? A few things to touch on.
Where should we start?
Well, I think there's one place to start, and I think this is perfect timing. I actually love this whole Whiteman thing, because obviously, you know, most people listening will know Jake Whiteman from winning the World Championships. And if you don't, you will have known him from being on Sports Personality and kind of getting a bit of mainstream coverage, which is really good for this story, because it wasn't last year, was it? Was it the year before at London, 2 years ago, when Phil Sesserman was the first Brit home, and he kind of got similar news coverage. Obviously, on BBC and stuff like that, the kind of running doctor type angle. So for these two to race, who are two quite recognisable names in like the more mainstream, I thought was really good. And obviously, 9 times out of 10, Whiteman's going to toast Phil over that distance. But at this point in the season, Phil's clearly, you know, on the up and white, but maybe not quite peaking yet. So they had a really good race, and Phil just pipped him on the line. They both ran 7:54, I think, 7:54, 7:55. Yeah. In a great BMC race, actually, there was, you know, five or six guys, I think, that finished under 8 minutes. So that was kind of a big one at the elite end of racing, I think.
Yeah, if you've not seen that finish, it's definitely worth looking at. It's all over Instagram, so you shouldn't have to go too far to find it. But yeah, it was a heroic finish, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, it was a great race. And shout out Tom Keane as well from Cambridge, the club mate, running 7:57, huge run.
Solid run. Unreal. And Alfie Manthorpe, track star, as well in that race, running 8:01. So a solid run from Alfie as well there.
Yeah, that is good running all round. And actually, that meet was, I think we're going to touch on some of the women's results from that meet as well, because arguably, well, in fact, obviously that was the race of the day, but it wasn't the best result of the day at all in terms of the times. Like 7:54 is great to, like, you know, it's great, but it's not great for the likes of Jake Whiteman, if you see what I mean. Whereas Izzy Boffey, I'm pretty sure I'm right in saying she actually beat her outdoor PB, which for 800 indoors is like crazy, because obviously, you know, the corners slow you down and you're doing way more corners indoors than you are outdoors. It's pretty simple. And she ran 2.0099, I think. She's basically under 2:01 for the first time. And that's also the European indoors qualifying as well. So to run that pretty much by yourself, obviously there's other people in the race, but to front run the European qualifying standard in arguably the season opener for everybody indoors.
Incredible.
It's probably the best result. Yeah, it's pretty bloody good. So well done to her.
Yeah, huge one.
And the only other, the other standout performance from that meet was Hannah Nuttall. She ran 8:52 in the women's 3,000 metres, which is just a phenomenal time, especially at this time of the year. And she blew the field apart. I think she beat, is it Revy?
Yeah, Walcott Nolan. Yeah, I was in a team with her at the Euros.
She beat Revy by a solid 30 seconds there. So she must have been going some there. And she's a member of the Manchester New Balance training group that I think Philly Bowden has just joined.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's really, really exciting what they've got building with that New Balance crew. I think they're all out in Flagstaff at the moment. And Hannah Nuttall from Instagram looks like she went pretty much straight from the meet to the airport to Flagstaff. So, yeah, they've got a good thing going over there. It'll be exciting to see what they do this year.
Yeah, it's interesting one, actually, because on the women's side, it looks fantastic. Obviously, Philly joining in the depth for the women. But actually, it'd be interesting to see who they recruit and if they do recruit on the men's side. Because at the moment, it's only Adam Craig, as far as I'm aware, that's in the New Balance team. And obviously, he's on the marathon side of things. They previously had Johnny Mellor there and Ben Connor there, but they're, you know, not with the group anymore for whatever reason. So it'll be interesting to see how that works. It's great them being in Flagstaff because, weirdly enough, Christian Noble, that I used to race out when I was in America last year, he's signed for New Balance Boston, and they have almost the exact same setup where they've only got two guys and they've got, you know, five or six really talented women, like that, pretty much. So it's kind of interesting that both groups are heavily dominant on the female side.
Yeah, similar dynamic.
Yeah, so whether it's just kind of a, you know, timing thing, or whether they have got a focus on trying to dominate on the female side rather than trying to compete with other brands on the men's side, I don't know. But yeah, interesting.
Definitely worth watching that group over the next few months, I think.
Yeah, and there was a few other, there was some results, Ben, and Tom, that I didn't actually know about this whole parkrun saga. So fill me in on this.
Yeah, so the parkrun world record has been beaten again, this time by the Aussie Izzy Bat Doyle. She ran 15:30 to break the previous record of 15:31, which was set by Melissa Courtney Bryan only 3 weeks prior. And I think maybe like 2 weeks before that, Samantha Harrison broke the world record in 15:49. So that's three times over the last month that the women's world record at parkrun has tumbled. So yeah, some interesting stuff happening there at parkrun. I was just wondering whether you think more pros will head down to your local parkrun and see if they can beat that record, given the sort of exposure that's had in the more general public.
It's an interesting one, because some of the listeners, in fact, if you're listening and you know this is a fact, let me know, because I'm intrigued. but I'm pretty sure there's only a couple of parkruns in the UK where if you run a 5K time there, it's a registered certified course and it actually counts for a 5K you can use for qualifying. So I'm pretty sure like Bushy Park, Dulwich and somewhere else, if you run a 5K and let's say you run 15 minutes, then if you need to enter a competition, you can use that 5K time. Whereas if you run it at another parkrun, even if the course is, you know, 5K, because it's not been certified, you can't use it to enter any other competitions. So in terms of, are we going to see professionals try and run really fast at parkruns? I don't think so for that reason. But could we see them use it more for like, actually, let me go down for a pressure-free tempo and give it a good go because there's other people there and it's a bit of motivation? 100%. I think, you know, why wouldn't people do it? All depends on training schedules, really.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I thought that's really interesting how that sort of panned out over the last few weeks. And I just wonder how fast it's going to get in 2023 if more pros go down and give it a crack.
Yeah, it's an interesting one for sure, isn't it? I think that the men's record from Andy Badley will take some beating. Was it 13:48? I think he ran.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, and he's coached by my coach Andy Hobdell. Well, he was back in the heyday anyway. And
there
I think
you go,
that
Tom.
Like a
give
a
yourself
solid...
a few years and you'll be breaking the parkrun world record.
Yeah, we'll see. But I think that was like a confidence boosting rust buster where Andy Badley didn't even look at his watch. He didn't know what he was running. And Andy was just on the bike next to him. So it was just a solo 13:48, which is outrageous, really. But yeah, it's exciting. Like you say, I think it's good for the sport, isn't it? Everybody knows what parkrun is. So to see these women like just break those records back to back, it can't be anything but good for the sport, can it really?
Yeah, yeah, well, 100%. I mean, I saw a thing. It was like in the last 3 weeks, there's been something like 5 stories on BBC Sport about athletics, like in the athletics category. And I'm pretty sure 3 of them are about parkrun, including one where it's like Jake Whiteman, he ran 14:40, so he didn't even run that quick. But because he's Jake Whiteman, this story on BBC is like, Whiteman wins local parkrun or something like that. So it's like, for whatever reason, and to a lot of athletics fans, that'll actually piss people off and be like, why is parkrun getting this attention? But you've got to, I think, in my opinion, take a bit of a wider scope and kind of say, okay, yeah, it is annoying that they're highlighting someone doing a parkrun rather than, you know, someone running a really fast 800 indoors. But to the common person, they don't know anything about what is an 800 indoors. They don't know what a time means. They don't know anything. But a 5K is pretty relatable. A parkrun in your local park is pretty relatable. So if it brings more people into the sport to watch it, and then, you know, they might go on and follow someone that they heard of or, you know, explore it a bit more, I think, you know, it's only a win.
Yeah. Parkrun's a gateway drug, isn't it? But a good one, I should say.
Certainly is.
Yeah, it's class C. What would you say then? Is class A marathon then? Is that what we're going for on the scale?
Wait, see, I don't know.
You don't go parkrun to marathon, do you? What's the intermediate?
Yeah, but a lot of people do, you know. There's a lot of people, especially from working in like running shops, a lot of people only know the marathon. They don't really contemplate the idea of entering 5Ks, 10Ks, half marathons. It's like the
all
only way
nothing.
To get like a...
parkrun, marathon.
Couch to parkrun to marathon.
Exactly. Yeah, make that program. Sell it for £130 a month.
Yeah, that's a good idea. That'll be out there somewhere already, though, so I'll just find it.
Yeah, ideal.
Lovely stuff. So that's pretty much wraps up the running news this week, I think. Should we move on to some listeners' questions?
Yeah, we got some bloody good ones this week, actually. Thanks to everyone for sending your questions. If you're submitting them via Instagram, we won't always get necessarily around to answering them in this episode, but we're saving them all up. So like when we need questions or we fancy talking about a certain topic, we'll just dig yours out the archive. So keep sending them.
Yeah, and that being said, you can also send in your questions to the podcast email address, which I'll leave down in the show notes. So the first question comes in from Fraser, and he has a question relating to a point Callum made previously on his easy runs in Leeds versus Cambridge. So do you think there's a benefit for doing your easy runs on hills versus easy runs on the flat, with the heart rate and effort being relatively the same?
Yes.
Go ahead.
I think it depends, and there's slight nuances to it. If it's a recovery run, like if the sole purpose of that run is to shake the legs out, to get a bit of aerobic stimulus and to, you know, get some junk out of your legs, but finish the run feeling like, you know, you're feeling better than when you started, I'd always opt for a nice flat out and back down the canal on, you know, dirt, grass, something like that, just to keep it as easy as possible. But if you're talking just an hour in the week or like 5 miles in the week, I think there's definitely benefit to getting on some hills. Because otherwise, you're not going to do your sessions over the hills unless it's a specific hill session. You might get some hills in your long run, but if you're always looking for the easy option, which is flat running, when it comes to any sort of elevation or undulation in a race, or if you do cross country and you've got to be strong, going up and down hills on technical terrain, you're going to really struggle. So I think conditioning yourself to hills, and as long as your efforts, like the question said, as long as the effort's not barbaric, as long as you're not killing yourself up these hills, I definitely think there's merit to getting some hills in the legs on just standard mileage runs.
Yeah, I think for me the simple answer to that question is yes. If you can get some hills in your easy runs, you're going to benefit from it aerobically. And it's also kind of like putting a bit of strength and conditioning work into your running as well. If you can't get down to the gym to do your like squats, your lunges, that sort of stuff, then adding hills in is a great way to combine the two.
Yeah, my thing would just be, it's not a deal breaker. So if you're listening and you think, I only run on the flat, or that's what I prefer, there's people that, you know, absolutely love the flat and only run there and run ridiculously good times. So it's not a case of you need to do it at all. One good thing about, and I'm a big advocate for running on different terrains, you know, different elevations, etc., is just because it works all the tiny little different muscles in your legs. So even the type of gradient of hill you run on will, you know, differ what type or like how deep in the muscle that you're using. You know, if you're going around corners on trails, your ankle stability, like all those little things. But again, we're talking about such small percentage gains that, you know, it's not you don't have to drive half an hour to go for a run on some hills. You know, it's kind of a very small factor.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to the next question, comes in from Marcus. Now, Marcus is running the London Marathon for St Helena's Hospice in April. And his question is, he's got his sights set on 3 hours at London, previously run 3:19 at Brighton in 2019. And he says, Ben, on your double threshold days, is that something I should look at, and how may that benefit me? Any tips / session ideas for his 3 hour marathon attempt? I best take the reins on this one. I think double sessions for marathon running isn't necessarily something that's very traditional. And I certainly don't see too many people doing it. I just find it really helps build up my lactate threshold, which then allows me to run comfortably at quicker paces for longer. And I combine that with my long run at the weekend. And that for me builds a nice recipe for the marathon. One of the main reasons I also like to do it during a marathon block is it also allows me to get pretty fit over the 10K and half marathon distances as well. So maybe if you're looking at targeting 3 hours, but you also want to run, I don't know, an hour and a half or an hour and 25 for the half marathon, then it may be something you want to look at. But I wouldn't say it's a traditional approach to the marathon. You probably want to prioritize those longer sessions, if I'm totally honest.
Yeah, I think it's the way that I read this question from Marcus is without the context of what he's currently doing, which I think for everyone is really important when you're deciding on how to increase your training, whether it be in volume or intensity. So, you know, two sessions on one day is, you know, great for some people. And if, like Ben, you're trying to run 85, 100 miles a week, then in order to get in that volume with the necessary percentage of intensity, you might have to find yourself doing that. Whereas if, for example, Marcus, you're doing, you know, 50, 60 miles a week, you might still be able to get in two quality sessions that are on different days, or arguably even Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, and get the training stimulus that you need for the marathon without having to do it. It's one of those things where, you know, things become quite like a sexy running idea, double threshold, you know, Ingebrigtsen's, like stuff like that. And you can read a bit too much into it. The best approach I would say is, you know, keep it simple when you're building up to a real big goal event. And then when you've got some B and C goals and races that you don't care as much about, that's when you should experiment with your training and see, you know, how you find it. So if you really want to smash London, I'd go with more traditional training approach and then maybe do a half marathon later on and experiment with some double days and see how your body reacts, etc.
Yeah, I think you boys nailed that, really. Like, it's not, yeah, I don't think you have to overcomplicate it in that regard. You know, a session where you're running quicker than marathon pace, a session where you're running at about marathon pace to get comfy and you know, get used to what that pace feels like, and then a nice long run, periodize your long runs. So you've got one which is at least, you know, 20 odd miles and should be good to go.
Yeah, for sure. Moving on to our next question, it is from Martin, and his running 2023 goals are to break 15 minutes for 5k and 31 minutes for the 10k. And his question is, which do you think is harder to achieve?
I ain't got a Scooby. I don't know. I'm not sure. Honestly, Martin, just you go for it, mate, and let us know, because I genuinely don't know. I think it depends. I don't really understand the question, honestly. What's harder? I don't know. They're both hard. I think it's difficult. It depends what kind of runner you are. If you're a 20-year-old that's been doing 1,500 metres and you're moving up a distance, you're going to find a sub-15 way easier than a sub-31. But if you, you know, came into running doing half marathons and you've got into your running and now you fancy doing something a bit faster, you know, getting some faster times, you're probably going to find that you're far more suited to getting a sub-31 and being at a, you know, more aerobic pace throughout the race than getting into the real faster stuff that you need for a sub-15. But yeah, I've got no idea which is harder, to be honest.
Yeah, I think for me personally, the sub-31 at a 10K is a little bit harder, because that would mean running 15:30 twice back to back for the 5K. So I would probably put the weight towards the 10K there. I think if you can run sub-15 for 5K, then you're doing well. But I think 31 for 10K is a little bit more impressive in my eyes. I don't know.
Yeah, I'd say without any personal experience of running either of those times, for me, 31 for 10K would be harder. And I just reckon if you made a list of all the people who could run sub-15 and all the people who could run sub-31, you'd probably have more sub-15 guys than you would sub-31 10K guys. Just think the engine that you need to have to maintain that sort of pace for 10K is just going to be greater, right? But I like Callum's answer. Callum's answer was fantastic. Don't know. Really don't know. But
I don't know. I reckon if you did a survey, it'd be like 50-50. Maybe we should put it out and ask people which.
Yeah, let's put it. We'll put it on on the podcast. But in fact, Insta story.
Yeah, and honestly, the way we'll phrase it, it's the same for everyone. So we'll work out like what that would be, you know. So what's easier, like a sub-16 or a sub, you know, whatever you need to run 33 or something like that, and we'll do it that way, because I think it applies the same for everyone.
Yeah. Should we do one more question and then wrap it up?
Yeah, I was thinking the same. So this one comes in from Sam, and he's currently training for a 5K PB, aiming for sub-17:30. His current PB is 17:57. Whenever he races, he uses the Nike Vaporfly Next Percent 2, but he doesn't like to do his training runs in them, mostly because he doesn't want to wear them out and can't afford multiple pairs of super shoes. So his question is, when I'm calculating my training paces, whether it may be my goal pace or 5/10K pace, these are all in my Vaporflies, i.e. my 5K goal pace is 3:29 per kilometer wearing Vaporfly. If I'm doing a training session in my daily training shoe, he says here he's using the Endorphin Speed 2, should he be aiming for the same paces, or should he reduce the pace by a set factor to allow for how much faster he feels he can run in the super shoes over the training shoes?
Wow. So basically, should you set your training plan according to your super shoe pace is the question.
That's an interesting question.
Yeah, that's a very, I don't think I've ever heard anybody really ask that question before.
No, it's quite a unique one.
Yeah, I like it. I think it's an interesting one, right? Because again, if you're lacing up your Vaporflies and they've not got many miles in them on race day, you just are going to be a few seconds a K quicker than you would be in your Endorphin Speeds on just a random Tuesday morning, you know, running laps around the housing estate. But I don't think that your pace has to change. I don't think you should put super shoe tax on your on your sessions necessarily. So I've done, I don't know, have you run in the New Balance Rebel V3 yet, Ben? Have you?
No, I haven't done, no. I've run in the one and twos, but not the threes.
Yeah, so I've been doing quite a lot in them recently. And you can definitely notice a difference, right? And I definitely prefer to have carbon on my feet when I'm running a bit faster. But I think I could quite handily do the majority of sessions in the Rebel V3 and not really lose that much. So I would just say, keep doing
your sessions. I would say the same.
Yeah, do your sessions in your speeds. The speed is, by all accounts, one of the greatest running shoes of all time. And don't look too into like the milliseconds and, you know, whether you're 2 seconds a K slower on your K reps compared to like what you need to do for your race pace. Because if you're running in and around that range, when you lace up your Vaporflies and you've got the race day adrenaline and all the rest of it, that will take care of itself. And those couple of seconds that, you know, you're fretting about in your training will be obsolete. They won't matter at all. So yeah, I think interesting question, but don't overthink it in that regard. You still got a great pair of shoes in the Endorphin Speeds, and just look forward to lacing up those Vaporflies on race day and getting that psychological and very measurable benefit from the carbon and the foam underfoot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you've nailed that one there. So that wraps up the listeners' questions this week. Thanks to everyone who's submitted those. As we said, we haven't answered all of them this week, but they've not been wiped clean off the slate. We'll save those for the following weeks. So yeah, thanks for submitting those. So looking ahead to next week, any big plans?
Yeah, I've got a couple of things. It's quite bad that I don't know what order I should prioritize these in. But I've been set a mile time trial on Saturday as part of a session.
Oh, interesting.
On the roads. I've never done anything like that before. So I've got absolutely no idea how to pace it, but it's sandwiched in between like a little session. And Andy said he's written down a time that he thinks I can run, which is really annoying because I've got no idea what that time is. And I've got absolutely, if you say I'll run 5 flat or run 5:10 or run 4:48, it could be any one of them in my head.
Oh, do you know what we should do? Ben, on
your do a sweepstake.
Ben, once the call's done, me and Ben will also on our notes page write down a time and then keep it for the next pod. That's good. I like that.
Yeah, okay.
That sounds good.
I was going to ask you for advice. I've got a rough idea. I was going to ask you for advice, but I reckon I should just full send it.
That would be my advice. My advice would be run way faster than you think you should be running.
Hold on for dear life.
Than I should be running, and you have to go, no, it's not, and you just keep running. And then if you have to tell Andy that you literally like had to stop running at 1200, then it happens, you know.
Yeah, I like it. Yeah, that was my general idea. Just get out hard and see what happens. But the other thing, which is probably a bit more important, is moving out on Friday.
A bit more, yeah.
Just slightly. Yeah, than 5 minutes of thrashing it around the block.
Yeah. So that'll be fun. But that's it, really.
Best of luck with that.
Thank you very much. Yeah. What about you, boys?
Are you staying local to where you live, or is it a big move?
Oh, yeah. Don't worry. That out and back route's not going anywhere. I'm staying pretty local. So, yeah, you'll be seeing plenty of that on Strava.
Quality.
Good.
Ben, what are you up to next week?
Much of the same as this week, to be honest with you. Week number 2 of 8. Keeping the intensity fairly moderate. And continue that threshold principle. And the main thing that I've sort of written for myself here is just don't overdo it. I've banked a good week now and I'm feeling good for it. And I want to take that sort of trajectory into next week as well.
Lovely.
Mate, I think you're right. Got the right approach there. I'm not doing anything exciting. Not that I can think of. Just getting back to running, get a solid week of training in, nothing flashy, just one session, one long run, I think, this week, so pretty easy again. Recover from the race. Got quite a lot on at work with various bits and bats, so I'll be head down with that. And hopefully something exciting happens that I can report back on, but we'll see.
No, never know. No rogue pizza toppings this week. You're not going to try like ostrich or something?
No pizza. Rogue toppings, but you have reminded me. I'm actually going out. I'm going out for an Italian on Friday night, actually. So if I do get a pizza, I'll report back. Go. But I don't know what I'll get. We'll see.
I'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I'll let
certainly
you know.
Will. Well, lovely stuff, guys. That pretty much wraps up episode 4 of the Run It Three Ways podcast for another week. We'll be back next Monday.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, guys.
Thanks, lads.
Lovely stuff.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.